This is our league, and this is your league. From the 55-yard line on CFL America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Stand by, 15 seconds to air. Stand by, all cameras and videotape.
Ready with your opening graphics. Stand by, Howard. Here we come, Frank. Ready, Don.
Stand by, audio, your opening music, and roll tape.
Take tape.
Program is a special presentation of the Big Ten Network, produced in association with the University of Illinois.
When you think Illinois football, I do. I think Red Grange, he's the man.
The all-time greatest, if not the greatest, halfback in the history of the game.
You get all the credit when the guy makes touchdowns, see, but to me, he's the most unimportant fellow on a football team, and I mean that.
Considered really the best college football player to ever put on a helmet.
I think the people will be just taken back with the statue.
He was a guy born to run and to play football.
He became a national figure. He became the person recognized as being maybe the most significant player to start the NFL.
I mean, that started as a beer league, and Red Grange turned it into something more legitimate.
Red Grange left the University of Illinois in 1925, but now he has returned to Memorial Stadium.
DeMarc, where do you want it, George?
You have the template up there?
Artist George Lundeen used over 2 tons of bronze to create this 12-foot tall sculpture of one of Illinois' greatest players.
Well, George Lundeen creates Red Grange.
And I got a call from the athletic department. And the fellow in the athletic department told me that I was one of 3 finalists for the sculpture to do Red Grange. And I said, and how many of those other guys were alumni of the University of Illinois? And there was a little silence on the other end, and he said, I don't think any of them.
Lundeen did the work in his studio in Loveland, Colorado.
And anytime you do a different character, you always want to find out a little bit more about them. To step into somebody's world, I mean, you have to do all this imagining what it was like. You have to read a lot about it. I think if you try to find a point in somebody's life that probably changed their life, that's the point that I wanted to capture. That's the time period I wanted to capture. Red Grange played the best game of his career at the best possible time. In 1924, 67,000 fans gathered at Memorial Stadium to watch the Michigan game. In the first 12 minutes, they witnessed football history.
It's homecoming at Illinois. Thousands of old grads and students gather for the annual pep rally on the night before the big game. Now for a look at the Memorial Stadium, dedicated to the Illini who gave their lives in the World War.
On October 18, 1924, Illinois was set to play Michigan for what many considered to be the Big Ten championship game.
Big Ten opener, first game in Memorial Stadium. College football at that time was humming. and all the stadiums were filled.
Incredible excitement around sports, and college football really started building an incredible fan base.
Michigan was a powerful team. They had been undefeated for 3 years.
Well, that game was so important. It was so hyped. It was Bob Zupke talked about that game in midsummer. He planned on that win against Michigan. It was the biggest thing in sports at the time.
There was a lot of friction between the two coaches. Bob Zupke was pointing for the game, and Fielding Yost and his staff up in Michigan was saying, oh, all Grange could ever do, all he could ever do was run the ball. He couldn't do anything else.
I had hardly arrived in Wheaton, Illinois in June after my first year before I started receiving letters from Zupke about the game coming up that fall. In all his letters, he would say what Yost was a coach of Michigan, what he had been saying about the Illinois team. He said Yost talked in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and he said we weren't fit to be in the Big Ten. And, you know, every week I'd get a letter. Well, eventually you get awfully mad, not at Michigan, but at Yost, you know.
This is play 36.
Football was a performing art. Zupke was an artist, and he was not only an artist with the paintbrush, he was an artist in football.
Just before the start of the game, Zupke had another trick up his sleeve. He asked his players to remove their heavy woolen stockings.
It absolutely threw the Michigan bench and the players and the officials in a tizzy, because what have you done? Did you grease their legs, or what have you done to get an advantage? And all it was just a psychological ploy.
Michigan stopped practice, and Yost and Herb Steger, the captain, came over. Yost felt some of our legs, and he said, Zup, this is one of your doggone tricks. He said, you're going in the dressing room, and you're going to grease those boys' legs. Well, Zup didn't deny it. We went in the dressing room. We didn't grease our legs. But I say, the way that game went in that first quarter, I think that whole first quarter, that Michigan line is standing up and asking our guys, had we gone crazy or something out there without any stockings on?
And a lot of people weren't even seated before the first touchdown was scored, you know.
In less than a minute, Grange ran 95 yards for a touchdown. The crowd was on their feet.
But he had the unique ability to make people miss. Many, many tacklers that were left with air as they approached Red Grange.
In 1920s football, after a touchdown, the defensive team had a choice to receive or kick off. It was common practice to kick off and try to hold the offensive team to gain a good field position. Yost stubbornly ordered the Michigan team to kick off again. Maybe the first run had been a fluke. This time, Michigan stopped Grange at the Illinois 20-yard line. But on the next play, Grange proved Yost wrong by taking the ball and running 67 yards to the Michigan goal line. As Red Grange ran against the Michigan defense, Quinn Ryan of Chicago's WGN Radio was at the stadium, broadcasting the station's first football game. Listeners thought the news of the second touchdown was a joke. After a series of plays, Grange again took the ball. Just when people thought it couldn't happen again, he ran 56 yards to a third touchdown. Red Grange went on to score another touchdown and passed for a sixth before the final score of 39-14. Michigan hadn't lost a game in two seasons, and now one man had beaten them.
So how did he do it? I think the planets lined up right. It was his teammates made the blocks, he made the runs, he made all the right cuts.
I've often said your grandmother could have scored touchdowns on that day, and possibly they could. I know mine could, because she was only 90 years old.
When you think about the significance of six touchdowns, six touches, I don't think anybody's going to do that again.
Red Grange, I wanted to capture him when he was on the field at the University of Illinois, playing football, making those cutbacks that he made, the famous moves that he made. Capture that time in their life when they were the most vibrant, the most exciting, and when they were doing those things that made you remember them.
Red Grange's record stood for 60 years at Illinois, and now a new statue stands in his honor at Memorial Stadium. The University of Illinois selected alumnus George Lundeen
to create this tribute to one of the greatest players to ever run on Zupke Field.
When I start a piece, I always sketch it first. I think that's something you learn early in life, how to draw. And not so much how to draw what you see out there, but sometimes what you see in here, and that's the most important thing. Just to see different angles and how I'm going to have to build the armature, which will hold up the next process, which is actually building the piece out of clay. Red Grange had a really tough childhood. His mother died when he was 5 years old, and his father spent so much time just working and away from home that it was said that the two boys, Red and his brother, pretty much raised themselves.
Lyle and Sadie Grange had two girls and two boys in Forksville, Pennsylvania. Lyle Grange worked as a foreman at a lumber camp. In 1908, Red Grange's mother suffered a hemorrhage after having a tooth pulled. She died before she could make it to the hospital. In his grief, Lyle moved his children near his family in Wheaton, Illinois. After a few months, he sent the girls back to live in Pennsylvania. In 1910, Wheaton, Illinois was home to about 4,000 people. There was a main street with a garage, a hardware store, a fire station, and one policeman. His name was Lyle Grange.
Wheaton is a small town and is seen as sort of a farming community. But it was close to Chicago, and there was actually a lot of crime, and Grange really worried about his father. Lyle Grange was a very tough sort. He was known for getting in fistfights, really liked aggression. Grange always admired his father for his toughness, and people were scared of this man. If you talk to the older folks that knew that family, most people would say that Grange boys sort of raised themselves.
Harold, who everyone called Red, and his brother Garland cooked, cleaned, and took care of each other. Red and his brother would sneak out to play football at an old apple orchard. Their father worried about the roughness of the game since the neighborhood boys were known to give each other broken bones and concussions.
Back then, football was seen as a game that parents did not like their kids to play. It was an incredibly dangerous game, and there were a lot of football deaths during this era. Red was sneaking around playing in these pickup games at the orchard, and one day Red came back with an injured back, really hurt. Red really feared his father. Lyle Grange really didn't want his son to play football. Red really didn't want to tell him, but he could barely walk. He did finally admit that he had been playing football. And Lyle at that point decided to let him play. He saw the dedication that his son had to this game.
There were few luxuries in the Grange household. Lyle impressed upon his boys a code of humility and toughness. The one place that Red felt true joy was in sports.
When he was in high school, he played baseball, he ran track, and he played football. And football was his real passion.
Extremely fast. What I've read, he could run a 100-yard dash under 10 seconds, which was extremely fast at the time.
Won the state championship in the 100 and the 220, and I think even the broad jump in his high school career.
I run the 220, and I high jumped, and I broad jumped.
Is that right?
And I won the 220 one year, and the broad jump one year, and won the 100 one year.
The University of Illinois would do some sort of recruiting. Back in the 20s, they would have track meets. Zupke would reluctantly walk out there and watch these kids. And one day, he saw Flash going by on the track. That was Red Grange. He really did want this kid.
He worked really hard. You know, I guess the story, you know, about him being an ice man and lugging up those big ice cubes up the second and third floor certainly helped.
In high school, Grange worked for the Thompson Ice Company, making $37.50 a week. He lugged 50-pound blocks of ice to the businesses and housewives of Wheaton. At school, he earned 16 varsity letters in 4 sports. Soon, Red Grange was getting encouraging news from a man whose very name meant football in Illinois, Coach Bob Zupke. Only two players in Fighting Illini football history have had their number retired. One is number 77, Harold Red Grange. Artist George Lundeen captured the galloping ghost just as he ran on this field over 80 years ago. Lundeen did the work in his studio in Loveland, Colorado.
When I first start a piece like this, I'll start with a few sketches. But right away, I'll grab some clay. I'll start to form small pieces, the head and the torso and the arms and how the legs come out of this piece. And I'll make a small armature, maybe out of toothpicks or aluminum wire, something that'll hold that clay up in place. I wanted to capture the movement of Red Grange. I tried to make it as simple as possible and try to get one idea through that here's a guy that was really fast and played a great game of football. I don't think I idealized him in any way. We certainly didn't add any muscle to him. I mean, here he was 170 pounds, 6 feet tall. He wasn't a big guy by any standard, even back then. Red was a fan of Illinois, and their coach, Coach Zupke, was his favorite coach, so when Red went to play for Illinois, it was a fulfillment of his earliest dreams. Now, Coach Zupke was very famous at the time and had a passion for football. The only two things he hated were recruiting college athletes and professional football.
Bob Zupke was a small, dynamic, intelligent, young German-American from Milwaukee who created a great career in football.
Zupke was a very unusual coach. He a great innovator of strategies, and also he invented the huddle. He invented a number of offensive plays.
And a lot of, I think, those coaches back then thought, well, it's a privilege for you to come here to play for me.
He hated recruiting college players. He really felt it was beneath him. He felt that people should come to the University of Illinois, try out for the team, and that was about it.
In those days, there were no scholarships given to college football players. Now, there may have been a few deals under the table from certain schools, but Zupke played it totally straight.
I never received a dime going to Illinois. I paid for all my own meals. I've often said the only money I ever made was when I was on a trip and you might get a free meal for something. I went mainly, let's say for a number of reasons. A good university, my state university. And of course, Zupke was beloved by every kid playing football in Illinois. My senior year in high school, I was on a track team. This was at Champaign. Well, and Zupke came out and introduced himself and walked about a half a block with me. And he said, young fella, if you come to Illinois, he said, you might have a good chance to make the football team. That was enough for me. I was pledged to the Zeta Psi fraternity, and I'll tell you how I got out for football. They didn't ask me what I was going to do. They lined all the pledges up in a row, and they said, you do this, you do that, and you do that. They got to me, and they said, you go out for football. And I said, no, I'm a basketball player. They said, go out for football. I went over to Old Illinois Field, and it must have been, 100 kids out for football, for the freshman team. And I didn't even ask for a suit. I'd heard all of these Chicago boys and Britton of Elgin and Doherty of Streeter, and I went back to the fraternity house, and they lined me up against the wall, my head against the wall, and they hit me with a paddle, which they do. There's still a dent in the wall at the Zeta Psi house where my head hit that wall. So I decided I'd go out for football.
So Red Grange became the greatest football player of the 20th century. And he always wondered why people made such a big deal out of it.
Hold my hand, understand. I'm the guy who wants to be a man. Won't you look into my eyes? You can see. It's no lie on my mind.
You know, I'll bet when Red Grange was still alive, probably in his 60s or 70s, he could have gone up to his house, knocked on his door, and I would imagine he would have let you go inside, have a cup of coffee with him, and he probably would have told you about all those days when he was playing football.
Hold my hand.
Red Grange left the University of Illinois in 1925, but now he has returned to Memorial Stadium. Artist George Lundeen used over 2 tons of bronze to create his 12-foot-tall sculpture of one of Illinois' greatest players.
It's going to be about 15 minutes before we're ready.
About 15?
Yeah, about 15.
Right now we're melting the metal, which will go in the mold. So we'll be casting Red Grange in the Lost Wax casting process. We have the pieces in shell. Those still have the wax in them. We put the wax shells in the oven. Then once the oven's very, very hot, it melts the wax out. Once the door's open, we roll the shells out. He'll be picking up the shells, moving them into the sand. At that point, they grab the crucible from the furnace, and then we pull the crucible out. We'll be pouring the bronze into the shells. Now all of that metal will go everywhere where the wax was. So it's a whole process. We start with the clay, we go to the wax, and then we go to the bronze. So the bronze looks like the wax, which looks like the clay. And hopefully it all turns out great. If it doesn't, we start all over again.
The original piece was sculpted in one big piece. And then once that piece was finished, we had to cut it up into separate pieces in order to make molds of it. There was probably 40, maybe 50 pieces of this piece that needed to be put together that were all separate out there. So when you look at the ceramic shell castings, when they're in the foundry, when they're being dipped, you don't always know whether that's a piece of his knee or if that's a piece of his shoulder, or if you don't know what they are until you bring them out. This is the larger-than-life wax pattern for the Red Grange we did for the monument at the University of Illinois. The piece is larger than life, but no more larger than life than Red Grange was.
In August of 1925, The Freshman, starring Harold Lloyd, was showing at Champaign's Virginia Theater.
Charles Pyle was part owner of the Virginia Theater, managing the theater, and he let the football players come in for free.
Pyle, who was known as Cash and Carry Pyle, was ready to move on from the Virginia Theater and his debts in Champaign. He was already working on his next big thing, and it had just walked into his lobby.
And he started befriending Grange. And Grange got a kick out of this guy. It was a heck of a lot of fun. He always had women around, he smoked, went to the barber every day and BS'd with everybody, and he was a guy you liked to hang out with.
I've read a little bit about C.C. Pyle, but it was the kind of guy that I probably wish I would have met sometime in my life. Some people believe that Pyle cheated Red Grange, but Red made a statement and said that every man would be lucky enough to know C.C. Pyle, so I'll take Red at what he said.
He was going to a movie with one of his teammates at the Virginia Theater, and he got a tap on his shoulder, and this usher said, Mr. Pyle would like to see you. And he said to the kid, how would you like to make $100,000 or more, you know, cash? And of course, Red was taken aback. He says, you're not serious. What do you mean? You know, and he said, well, I got some ideas.
At the Virginia Theater, Red Grange shook Pyle's hand. The deal was done, but no one would know until Grange played his last college game.
They kept it secret because they didn't want to ruin Grange's eligibility. Grange didn't want to embarrass the University of Illinois. He didn't want to lose the respect of Bob Zupke. A kid that he considered his son was going to join professional football, which he considered joining a criminal syndicate.
Here in 1925, Red was grilled by Zupke, and he was actually called before the editor of the News Gazette and accused of being a pro.
I mean, Grange always said, I never signed anything, we never signed anything, and they undoubtedly didn't, but I think they really had an agreement. Oh. that last season for Grange was a tough season. The team wasn't so good his senior year. Zupke pointed the season toward a game in Pennsylvania. And this was a big deal, because but could he go against an Eastern power and beat this team?
Then they went out there and just took Pennsylvania apart. And probably Grange played his greatest game.
But this game against Pennsylvania made Grange into an even bigger star.
On that Halloween day in 1925, Red Grange scored 3 touchdowns. The final score was Illinois 24, Penn 2. The awe felt by the great Eastern sports writers was soon read across the country. Grantland Rice watched Red play in the mist at Franklin Field and dubbed him the Galloping Ghost. The only person more excited about the win than Zupke was C.C. Pyle.
Here was a guy who once again performed in the big game, and he was looking at dollar signs down there.
3 weeks later, Illinois faced Ohio State at Columbus. A crowd of over 84,000 people gathered in the stadium. Many camped out for tickets and tried to sneak past the gates, all to watch Grange's last time on the college gridiron. Illinois won the game, but the real drama happened after the last play. Grange announced to a flood of reporters, "I am turning pro." As the team left the locker room, Zupke asked Red to go for a ride.
He thought he could talk him out of it, you know, but he let him know how opposed he was and how upset he was about this whole thing. And Zupke and Rockne and all the great coaches were just death on the NFL.
College football was really seen as a maker of men, whereas pro football was seen as really a disgrace. It was really a beer league, is what pro football was. The NFL was just a beer league.
After riding and talking for an hour and a half, coach and player went their separate ways. Grange headed to Chicago.
I think it was really a hard decision for him because of his respect for Bob Zupke. But, you know, there comes a point in time, I think, that you said, I've done all I can do at this level, and now let's go to the next.
The next morning, Grange and Pyle waded through a crowd of reporters to meet the owners of the Chicago Bears, George Halas and Dutch Sterneman.
There was probably 40, maybe 50 pieces of this piece that needed to be put together that were all separate out there. So you have to sandblast it, you get your grinders out, you start to polish it. You weld all those pieces back together. Very hands-on, intensive process that takes a lot of skill and a lot of good workers to make it work. We're feeling it all, so we don't have any burrs, anything to catch your fingers. When people touch this, we want it to almost feel soft on this kind of surface. Okay, Brad, right here is where we need to get all that stuff done, right here. Want these highlights to really jump out here and really make them look hot.
Okay.
And on the back of the cleats right here, we want to really polish up these nails so that they really jump out at us when we do that patina. When I look out at the piece when it's nearly finished, what I'm proud of is the fact that I was chosen to be the sculptor, to do a guy that was as famous as Red Grange.
Illinois alumnus George Lundeen assembled over 50 pieces of bronze to make the statue of Red Grange.
How does it look out there, Tim?
Now that the pieces are welded together, he prepares it for the patina, or colored glaze.
sandblast with about 80 pounds of pressure with aluminum oxide. It gives it a real blast and cleans the bronze. It starts out on the head as high as he can go and he'll just start coming down. That takes all of the imperfections off the surface so that when we do the patina, it'll accept all the metal. It has no oils on it. It's very, very clean. It's right down to the surface of the metal.
It has a very flat finish to it compared to the very shiny finish that it had previously. It has no more wax on the piece, no more dirt, and no more oil. We'll spray it with liver of sulfur, turn the whole thing jet black.
We're rubbing the patina, the liver of sulfur off this piece. We want to rub off all of the black where we don't want it. We'll keep the black where we do want it. We want to keep the black and all of the nice little indentions and all the texture. And we just rub as much of that back and try to get those highlights on the eyes as much as we can.
When the sun hits it, it should really look nice. That's what we're striving for. And that's what we'll get.
Not every day you get to put your name right underneath a name as famous as Red Grange.
Immediately after his last college game in Columbus, Ohio, Red Grange said goodbye to his Illinois uniform. Instead of returning to Champaign with the team, he left for Chicago with his manager, C.C. Pyle. The next morning, he began a new life as a professional player with the Chicago Bears. The Bears were owned by former Illini players George Halas and Dutch Sterneman.
George Halas and Dutch Sterneman were football guys. They didn't even know what hit them with C.C. Pyle.
The snag in the negotiations came when my grandfather thought that the Bears would get two-thirds and C.C. Pyle thought that he would get two-thirds. So they negotiated through the night and they finally reached a 50-50 agreement.
Shortly after he started playing with the Bears, Grange returned to Champaign for the end-of-the-year football banquet.
Zupke actually insulted him from the podium about his being playing for pay, and it really upset Red, and he walked out of the banquet.
He made it a choice to go with Pyle. Didn't really understand the consequences, the short-term consequences of that, the effect that it would have with his relationship on Bob Zupke. C.C. Pyle is saying, we can sell out stadiums all over the country. But would it happen? I mean, this was a great risk for Red Grange.
Pigment part of the patina, which gives it this nice bluish color and lets the light come through, so you're actually seeing as much of the bronze as anywhere else. It gives it such a translucent color of the bronze.
And then if you can go to the on top of the seven, the right seven, go left to right, there you got it.
You know, all the time you're working on a piece, you're always thinking, what's it going to look like when it's finished? And it isn't really until today, when you finally get all the colors together, that you really know what this piece is going to look like. And for all practical purposes, it's finished. It should look like this for a long, long time. We're taking Red Grange to the University of Illinois, Champaign. We're going cross country down Interstate 70. This is the last big run Red Grange will make. One of the first big runs he made was in 1925 when his manager, Charlie Pyle, organized a barnstorming trip across the country. He traveled with the Chicago Bears, and every two or three days they had a game.
In December of 1925, Red Grange and the Bears boarded a train in Chicago for a nationwide barnstorming tour.
And it was really after he left Illinois in 1925, when the NFL was trying to get off the ground, that he barnstormed across the country, filled the stadiums, and you know, I wonder if the NFL would be quite where it's at today if that didn't happen.
When they decided to tour, it was really Red Grange's Chicago Bears touring. It wasn't George Halas's Chicago Bears.
People were very much conscious of Red Grange coming to town and touring the country, so they flocked to the stadiums to watch him play.
It was a thrill ride for the Chicago Bears. These are guys who had been playing in front of 1,000 or 2,000 drunk fans. And now they're touring around the country and they're playing in sold out stadiums everywhere.
It was estimated between 400 and 500,000 people saw Red play during that tour.
One of the first matchups was against the New York Giants.
Because the Giants were going out of business. And they were struggling, and it's known as the game that saved the Giants because they sold out the Polo Grounds because of Red Grange.
After the game, Grange met one of his heroes, Babe Ruth. Ruth reminded the young football player that all you gotta do is run for another touchdown and they'll yell their brains out for you. When the Bears arrived in Washington, D.C., Halas and Grange were invited to the Oval Office to meet President Coolidge.
My grandfather and Grange were introduced as George Halas and Red Grange of the Chicago Bears. And President Coolidge says, "Oh, it's very nice to meet you. I've always enjoyed animal acts."
Everywhere the team went, the media and the fans could not get enough of Red Grange. Pyle was a master at marketing Grange as a small town boy who was suddenly famous.
I can only imagine what the barnstorming tour must have been like. I had read where Red Grange played 8 games in 11 days in one series.
The tour totaled 19 games in 67 days, and Grange made 18 touchdowns.
They forgot about the wear and tear on the players. They say there was a game out on the West Coast where actually the trainer had to suit up and play in one of the games to get 11 players to play.
One game where my grandfather had to play quarterback because all the other quarterbacks were hurt.
But you know what it did? It spread football around the country, and it was huge for the National Football League. But I think Red Grange's body paid the price.
People seem to forget that before the tour, Grange also played an entire college season. By the end, he had suffered at least 10 concussions and 2 serious shoulder injuries.
Grange was willing to do it. He wasn't a guy that was going to complain about it. And so C.C. Pyle just drove him essentially into the ground. And George Halas sort of let this happen. I think he probably felt pretty bad about it. From a friend-to-friend sense, that he ruined a great talent.
Playing football made Red Grange a rich man. The average player made $150 a game. But with their share of the gate receipts, Pyle and Grange made as much as $30,000 a game.
The money was just flowing in. Like, it would never stop. And he bought, you know, numbers of cars and, you know, he loved fast cars like them guys would do.
The summer of 1926, Red Grange went to Hollywood to star in his first movie. C.C. Pyle negotiated a contract for $300,000. Grange wouldn't have to stretch his acting abilities. He was cast to play the part of a football player named Red Wade in a drama called 1 Minute to Play.
Most people thought it would be a disaster, or at least he wouldn't be a very good actor. But surprisingly, he did a very good job. The reviews, the LA Times, Variety, other reviews were quite positive, and they were kind of shocked that he could actually act.
Oh, About an hour ago, we stopped at a gas station in Missouri. We were fueling up, and this nice fellow came walking up to the flatbed looking at the sculpture, and he asked me, he said, "Where are you taking Red Grange?" I said, "Well, how did you know it was Red Grange?" He said, "Number 77. He said, "Everybody knows number 77.
There's a football player out there.
Red Grange."
In 1926, Red Grange was a media sensation. On his barnstorming tour with the Chicago Bears, Grange received around 200 letters a day and almost 40 interview requests. Today, the cameras surround the ghost again as his likeness is unveiled at Memorial Stadium in Champaign. After the barnstorming tour, Grange rested in Hollywood and launched a movie career. His manager, C.C. Pyle, always looked beyond football in an effort to make money off his product. Pyle and Grange made almost $40,000 in endorsement deals, and then another $59,000 from a candy bar. Grange was set for life.
The barnstorming tour to C.C. Pyle was small potatoes. He wanted something bigger.
He wanted his own team, and he wanted it in New York. The National Football League owners denied his request and suggested he could set up a team in Brooklyn.
Well, C.C. Pyle was quite upset by this, and he said, "I'll just start my own league."
Grange left the Bears and went to New York with Pyle. He invested all his earnings in their new team, the New York Football Yankees, and the new league. But the new American Professional Football League got off to a rough start. It only lasted one season.
The problem was they did not have enough solid owners of the other seven teams, and they were weak. Financially, and they relied upon Red to carry the whole league.
In 1927, Grange suffered a devastating knee injury playing against the Chicago Bears, and by the end of the season, the football Yankees were over. Pyle and Grange were broke.
A lot of people would have been crushed by it because he was getting sued by creditors. He defaulted on loans. He had women after him that were claiming that he had fathered children, and he was single. Of course, he was fair game for that kind of a thing.
Grange performed in traveling vaudeville acts, trying to make some of his money back. In 1928, Grange got a call from George Halas. He asked him to come back to the Bears.
But Red said, "You know, I'll never be the same, Coach. You're getting damaged goods." And he said, "I don't care." He said, "I want your mind and your spirit on the team."
So my grandfather was always very, very grateful to Red Grange. After Red Grange had left the Bears, my grandfather was very eager to get him back in 1929.
I think Halas knew what the name Red Grange meant.
Red Grange stayed with the Bears six more years and helped them win the 1933 NFL Championship game. Grange reconciled with Bob Zupke, and his old Illinois coach made it to Chicago many times to catch the galloping ghost at Wrigley Field. Grange retired from the Bears in 1935 and went on to a successful career as a sports broadcaster. In 1963, George Halas and Red Grange were both charter members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Red Grange died in 1991 at the age of 87.
Just absolutely outstanding.
He was it.
I mean, it's just gorgeous. It's got some color to it.
Bigger than life, which is, I suppose, what we think of him as having been.
Your influence from Seattle to see this. That's pretty sweet.
That's unbelievable.
Thank you.
The preceding program was produced by the University of Illinois in association with the Big Ten Network.